Back to the Iowa blog. I am your host, Craig Wynn. After just completing a series of programs on my favorite topics, the covenant and the story of the Messiah and Son of God, Dowd, and his beautiful and inspiring, enlightening Mizmor Psalms, we are now turning to my least favorite subject. But unfortunately, this subject, I am the foremost expert in the world. Having written the five volumes of Goddamn Religion, 4,200 pages of analysis of the Islamic scriptures, where I put the Quran in chronological order using the Islamic Hadith to present Islam as Muhammad brought it into existence, as it really is, in an indisputable manner. I know more about the religion and why it inspires terrorism and death and rape and torture and enormous amounts of dishonesty and delusions than anyone else. And so it is my responsibility to share what I have learned, particularly because I love Yisrael. My mission is to protect Jews. And as a result, this religion, which was conceived to eradicate them, where Muhammad began the religion of Islam, by perpetrating genocide against Jews so that he could satiate the lust for money of the first Muslims, and they could steal their homes, rape their wives, and enslave their children. That is the birth of Islam, and the world needs to know it. So I've begun a series of programs that share what we know about Muhammad's first terrorist raids. This is about a year after Muhammad arrived in Yathrib, today's Medina. And we're going to pick up the story with a Bukhari Hadith, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 288. Should anyone believe that Muhammad was more than the godfather of a criminal enterprise committed to waging war against all mankind, I want you to think again. Because where we are headed in a number of programs is to the first successful terrorist raid of Muhammad. And it's the Battle of Badr. It is the subject of the 8th surah of the Quran. It is one of the most despicable presentations ever made in the name of a god or religion. But before we get there, I want to share the background with you so we don't pluck something out of context, so that you know the whole story. This hadith reads, I witnessed a scene that was dearer to me than anything I had ever seen. Aswad came to the Prophet while Muhammad was urging Muslims to fight the pagans. He said, we shall fight on your right, and we shall fight and on your left, and in front of you and behind you. I saw the face of the Prophet getting bright with happiness, for that delighted him. There is a myth that is percolating in ignorant Britain, that jihad is okay for the Muslims marching in the streets to say, to terrorize people into submission, because jihad has many meanings. It is a lie. It does not. It has one meaning in the Quran, and since it is an Islamic term, the only definition that matters is the one that Allah gave it. And the definition of jihad in the Quran is fighting and killing in Allah's cause. That is an irrefutable fact. And so whoever in Great Britain, soon to be Little Britain, made that determination, you are ignorant and you are immoral. Here, the thing that delighted Muhammad was those who fought for him, around him, with him. Mind you, he was never fighting to defend the first converts to Islam. Never. He only fought to conquer people, to steal their property, to steal everything that they had, to rape their women, to enslave their children. That is the only reason that he fought. Every terrorist raid is either a successful or failed version of Muhammad sending the first Muslims out to rob people, to kill them, to enslave them, and to intimidate them through terrorism. Those are the facts, and they are also indisputable. What is not a fact is the reference to Muhammad as a prophet in the Hadith. Muhammad was not a prophet. He never issued a single prophetic statement that proved true. Not one. And every time he made a pronouncement, it turned out to be untrue. To be a prophet, one has to be right 100% of the time. One mistake and you're done. You are a false prophet. In Muhammad's case, he never got one right, and he got them all wrong. You could not be a bigger fraud as a prophet than was Muhammad. Let the truth be known. Now, I doubt that there were many like him, men who claimed to speak for God, who were delighted in slaughtering estranged family and friends, which is the pagans that he was referring to. They were his own kin. So why even pretend that the man who chose terror over religion was a prophet? Even if he got one right, which he didn't, even if he got them all right, which he didn't, why pretend that he was a prophet when all he cared about was terrorizing his own kin, the people who were part of his community? And he didn't just want to terrorize them. He didn't just want to kill them. He didn't just want to fight them. He wanted to rape their women and enslave their children. And he did so over and over again. Now, religions have different means to achieve sainthood, although none quite like Islam, where the raiders, as the most beloved Muslims, Bukhari, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 290, the believers who did not join the Ghazwa and those who fought are not equal in reward. Did you hear that? The Islamic Hadith, this is the second most important book in Islam, the collection of Hadith by Bukhari. They are essentially the essence of Islam, because without Bukhari's Hadith and Ishaq's Hadith, as well as Tabari's, there is no example of Muhammad to follow. There is no way to actually be a Muslim without these Hadith. And every one of the Hadith is consistent with the message in the Quran. And in this case, what they just said, if you are a good Muslim, a rewarded Muslim, you are a fighter. And we're not talking about fighting for justice. We're talking about fighting with weapons to kill. And if you are a bad Muslim, then you are peaceful. It is possible to be a good person and be a Muslim, but only if you are a really lousy Muslim. Otherwise, all good Muslims are terrorists. That is the message of the Quran and Hadith. And they are irrefutable as it relates to Islam. This was so thoughtful and pragmatic, I'm surprised it wasn't elevated to the sixth pillar of Islam, Bukhari Book 5, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 320. Allah's apostle said, when your enemy comes near, shoot them, but use your arrows sparingly so they're not wasted. Oh, he was a pragmatic killer. We don't want to waste our arrows. Use them sparingly. And wait until your enemy. Now, the enemy here happens to be their fathers, their sons, their mothers, their daughters. It's the very people that they grew up with that they have now turned against. Yes, Muslims were very, very adept at killing people before they turned on infidels. It was the double whammy, if you will, of Islam. They kill so that Allah can torture. Bukhari, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 401. Allah's wrath became severe on anyone the Prophet killed in Allah's cause. You hear that? According to Islam, according to Allah, according to Muhammad, anyone that a Muslim kills, Allah tortures. That means all of the girls that the Muslims of 10-7 raped all of the children that they tortured. Allah joins them. Allah is going to torture them too. Can you imagine a God being that despicable? Do you imagine a terrorist, sadistic God? Well, if you can, then you know Allah. While the terrorist raids were hardly inspiring, religious symbolism and rewards were used to solicit and motivate the new combatants. Bukhari, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 456. Muhammad led the fear prayer with one batch of his army, while the other batch faced the enemy again. The enemy is defined as the people he grew up with. They are the Quraysh. That is who he was hunting at this point. They were his family. They were his warrior's family. They turned on them first. Why? Because of two reasons. One is they knew Muhammad best, and they knew that he was a fool, that he was demon-possessed. They knew that he was lying and that he was a reprehensible terrorist. And their claims permeate the Quran from beginning to end. It's the single most repeated argument in the Quran. Is the people that knew Muhammad best, far better than anyone today, accused him of being a demon-possessed, lying, deadly, plagiarizing fraud. He wanted them dead for that reason. The second reason he wanted them dead, because he wanted to steal their property, and he wanted to steal their religious scam. The religious scam that was Islam existed hundreds of years before Muhammad. The Quran makes it very clear, as does the Hadith. Muhammad simply incorporated the pagan religious scam of his ancestors into the new Islam. That's the truth as well. The prayer of fear in Islam is not a prayer at all. You've heard it. There's no denying it. The prayer of fear is defined as Allahu Akbar. Muslims say it anytime a person is being harassed or tortured or abused by a Muslim. They screamed Allahu Akbar as they hauled dead, bludgeoned, raped Jews into Gaza on 10-7. They scream Allahu Akbar before they commit any terrorist act. That is the prayer of fear. It is designed to do the same thing that all of their marches are doing in the streets of Europe and the United States, the same thing that their riots on college campuses are doing. It is designed to instill fear. They're trying to get you to capitulate. They want you to see them as an irresistible force. They want to cower everyone into submission. And fear is their tactic. That is why terror is their only tactic. Allahu Akbar. Allahu is one of the three names that are used to describe Allah in the Quran. Allahu, Allaha, Allahi. It means for him. Islam was only for Allah because Allah is Satan and he wanted to be worshipped as God. Now, beyond that, Akbar, since everything in the Quran is a bastardized version of Hebrew, Akbar means rat, mouse. So it really means Allah's a rat, if you get to the root of the word. They want you to believe that it means Allah is greater. Now, progressives in the media will tell you that Allahu Akbar means God is great. They're lying to you. Deliberately, purposefully misleading you. Because they want to put all religious people in the same basket and pretend that their gods are all the same. Allah is a very peculiar God, unlike any other that religions has ever fabricated. He is especially cruel. He spends all of his time in hell, just as he insinuated in that prior verse. Every reference to him in the Quran, he is in hell torturing people, ripping off their skin, pouring boiling water down their throats, burning them on a rotisserie, replacing their skin when it becomes so singed that they can't feel pain anymore so they can continue to feel that pain. And everyone who does not capitulate to him is going to be treated by Allah in that way, should he be real. Fortunately for us, he is not. Unfortunately, Muslims don't know that. The fact of the matter is the reason that Allahu Akbar was coined is its purpose is to say that Allah is greater than Yahweh, the God of the Jews, the only God that exists. It is Satan's wish. If you read Yashaya Isaiah 14, you will meet Allah. As a matter of fact, Allah's name is even given, Halal. You may say, well, that's not Allah's name. Oh, yes, it is. What is the name of the mosque in Mecca? Yes, Allah is named right there. And it says that he is despicable and that his quest is to rise above the Almighty. He is the God of religion. And he just takes the mask off in Islam, showing his true nature. So, Allahu Akbar, never forget it, means Allah. Well, in Hebrew, it means Allah's a rat. And the Muslim mindset, it means Allah is greater. It doesn't mean he's great. It means he's greater. And it is actually an impossibility in Islam because Allah claims to be the one and only God. He says there's no other God but him. And yet, he's greater. How can he be greater if there's only one? I mean, it's the whole thing is just screwed up. But Muhammad wasn't very bright. Allah wasn't very bright either. And the people who believe them aren't very bright, which is how the religion continues to exist. Yes, the prayer of fear is Allahu Akbar. Allahu is greater. It is the religion's most renowned slogan. It is its signature. It is a terrorist calling card. And in Islam, jihad and Allahu Akbar are inseparable. Maybe I'll tell that to the Brits. Maybe they'll have a better understanding of what jihad means. Maybe they'll even understand why jihad is the core of mujahid, which is an Islamic warrior. Liars revel in accomplices, even if contrived. So Bukhari, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 330. The prophet said, "This is Gabriel, holding the head of his horse, equipped with arms for the battle." No. I probably am the first person to actually identify Gabriel. It's Gabriel in Hebrew. Again, everything in the Quran is ripped off from Hebrew. Arabic is just bastardized Hebrew. Gabriel means God's most courageous and competent man. It's the most competent and capable man of God. Gabriel is from Gabor, and Gabor speaks of a man. Gabriel is not an angel. Gabriel is not a malak. Gabriel, when he is presented in Daniel, is Dod. Dod, David, is God's most competent and capable man. It is Dod, the prophet, the king, the Messiah, who came into Babel to meet with Daniel to tell us what he was going to accomplish. It is a prophecy that I cover many times in the Yahweh-branded series of books. I hope you'll read it because it is one of the most profoundly important prophecies ever presented. But that is all that is known of Gabriel. And it is clearly Dod, but ripping off everything that belongs to the Jews, just like Christianity did before them, there is this pretense that Gabriel was somehow a Muslim warrior that came down riding his horses, that he had swords ready for the battle. He had dust in his teeth. He was chomping at the bit to kill Jews. And that he gave Muhammad the Quran recitals. It is a complete lie. It is the corruption of the single most important man in human history, our Savior, our King, our Messiah, the very Son of God. Gabriel is God's most courageous and competent man. He is therefore Dod. So all of this was absolute rubbish, and Muhammad knew it. He was lying through his ugly, rotten teeth. As I shared, this name is derived from the book of Daniel, where Gabriel was identified as a man. And matter of fact, each time that Gabriel visited with Daniel, the first thing he said is, "This man came to me. This man that I'm calling Gabriel, God's most competent and courageous man." Not only does the title mean man of God, but he introduced him as a man. And that's all the reference we have to Gabriel. If you think otherwise, you have been deceived. This notion that Gabriel appeared to a mythical Mary about the birth of Jesus is just one lie piled on top of another. Because people are gullible. It's horrendous. Stupid. He's a man. He's not an angel. Or more correctly, he was not presented as a Malak spiritual messenger, even though, you know, this name, it's a compound of Gibor, strong man, Gibor, competent and courageous male, and El, God. I mean, it doesn't get any easier than this. Take a little bit of time and do your homework. Look at the words. I mean, I'm here trying to educate the world, not only on who Yahweh is and what he's offering, so I can awaken Yisrael so that they can come home, but also to spare the world of this plague of Islam so that you're not victimized by it. And I've done the work for you. All you have to do now is read. I explain it all. No one else has ever done this, and it's my gift to you. All of it is free. I'm sharing right now from Volume 3 of Goddamn Religion. Go to goddamnreligion.org. It's on the bookshelf. It is entirely and completely free. This happens to be one of many books. This is the hardback form. This also comes in a paperback form. It's 5 volumes based entirely on the Islamic scriptures. Everything I say in it is either true because it is based entirely on the Islamic scriptures, or there's no basis to the Islamic scriptures and Islam isn't true. Therefore, Gabriel is one of God's many titles, along with firstborn son, chosen one, shepherd, Messiah, savior, and king. The reason that Muhammad lied about him is because the Christians in Petra, which is where he grew up, discounted the nonprofit's claims to be anything of any substance. And of course, he even claimed that he was more important than their Iesus Christus. There were many, many Christians who resettled in Petra after the earthquake destroyed its water systems, and it was a hideout from the Romans, because the Romans abandoned the place. And Muhammad claimed that he was better than Iesus Christus. He used the name Iesus, which is a transliteration of Esau, the person that God hated. But then again, Muhammad wasn't very good with names or history or truth, for that matter. Since they believed, albeit wrongly, that the survival of a baby God was heralded by Gabriel's angelic vision, they surmised that Muhammad couldn't be his equal without similar pronouncements, so Muhammad made them up. Always the conniving one, Muhammad parroted the name and claimed him as if he were both an angel and a personal assistant. And while he was wrong on every account, well, for example, if he really was a Malak, Malak is a spiritual being. They're an energy-based being. If a Malak wants to engage to stop somebody from doing something, they want to thwart their activity, they will simply vaporize them. I mean, just whoof, amounts of energy gone. They don't pick up swords. You know, Yahweh's Malak, spiritual envoys and messengers, do not play with weapons of war. They don't ride horses either. They can travel in space and time. This is an Arabian projection on a Christian myth derived by counterfeiting the Torah and prophets. He was wrong on every account, misappropriating people from Yahweh's Torah and prophets. And he had done so often that Allah became proficient at it as well. Muhammad simply followed suit, unaware of the fact that amongst people who know the truth, who have done their homework, who have actually read and thought about what is revealed, he made a fool of himself. That's why I disprove his credibility all the way through the 4,200 pages of Goddamn Religion. I prove the case overwhelmingly. It is ironic that based upon his return with Yahweh on Yom Kippurim in 2033, Gabriel Dodes' first order of business will be to haul Satan, and thus Allah, off to Sheol and then eliminate all Muslims, along with all of their shrines, mosques, governments, and militias for having abused his people. Now, that's only partially true relative to the timing. I'm actually going to return 3.5 years before Dodes' arrival, and I will be standing next to Elia. I will be sharing these very words with all who will listen from the Temple Mount. And since I'm allergic to all things Islam, the Dome of the Rock and the Mosque, Alaska Mosque, will both be destroyed. If Jews don't have the courage to destroy them between now and then, I will destroy them upon my return. So they will get an early demise. Good riddance. There'll be no greater enemy of Islam than the Messiah, than Gabriel, than the Son of God. So Muhammad chose poorly on who to tick off. And since I have been given the opportunity to serve as Dodes' herald, representing him between now and this time, I will not forget what Muhammad falsely claimed regarding my shepherd, savior, and king. As his judge, I intend to inflict worse on Muhammad than he perpetrated against Yehudim before dispatching his sorry soul to Sheol, hell. Yes. I am going to condemn Muhammad to hell, but not before I torture him for all of the hell he has wrought upon God's people, for all of the little children who have been tortured by Muslims, for all the women that have been raped by Muslims, for all of the Jews who have been harassed and enslaved. Recognizing that in the Islamic State since 1948, 99.5% of the Jewish population is gone. And they claim genocide against Jews. Sheesh. I am not just writing a series of books against the nonprofit of Islam and his ungod. I'm condemning them to a painful punishment and sending them off to hell. Deservedly so. Bukhari, Volume 5, Book 59, Number 440. Allah's apostle used to say, "None has the right to be worshipped except Allah alone, because he honored his warriors and he made his messenger victorious. He defeated the infidels and their clans, so there is nothing left." Did you listen to that? Did you hear what Muhammad said? First of all, a God that wants to be worshipped is demented. To create an inferior species to worship you says that you're a narcissist, not worth knowing. God does not want to be worshipped. Donald Trump may want to be worshipped. You know, he is a narcissist. Fact is, he is a whole lot better than the alternative on this last election by 1,000,000%. But nonetheless, you know, he loves adulation. Yahweh wants none of it. He never once asked anyone to bow down to him. He never once asked anyone to worship him. He never once tells anyone even to pray to him. He knows who he is. He's comfortable with who he is. He knows what he's offering. And his desire is to help us, not the other way around. And in this particular case, Allah needed to be worshipped. Why? Because Allah isn't God. He needs to be worshipped. That is his goal. He wants to be worshipped as if he were a god. And how did he deserve this? Because he honored his fighters, his warriors, his killers. And he made Muhammad victorious. What? With terror. If this is why your God deserves to be worshipped, then you are a terrorist. You are sadistic. Then you're no better than he is. Then he said he defeated the infidel clans. The clans he's talking about are his own family, the very people who gave him life, so that there is nothing left. We will continue our presentation of Muhammad's first terrorist raids so that you know the truth about Islam, about the Quran, about the Hadith, about Allah, and about what terror really represents in this religion. You will understand why they're trying to terrorize us in our streets, on our college campuses, and in social media. And with the truth, they will not be able to harm you. I am Craig Wynn, and this has been the Yahweh Blog.